So the eclipse is coming your way. You got the glasses on, Jim Duquette?
Oh, can you give me a second?
Yeah. Go ahead. Grab the glasses, because I love the eclipse glasses that you have to wear. Because I saw this the last time that we had it, and I was in Madras, Oregon. Look at for those listening, Jim Duquette. Jim Duquette's got the glasses on.
It's totally dark. You can't see a thing.
So funny. Have you seen it before?
I've seen it before. I don't remember having the glasses, though. But really? I can still see fine. So I don't, you know. I mean, they tell you don't stare at it. You're going to ruin your eyes. And I don't want to ruin my eyes. But I don't need glasses. You know, I'm in my 50s. I still don't need glasses. So I don't know. I'm not the guy to, you know, to go staring at the eclipse here, because everyone tells you not to.
Don't do it.
However, I'm not going to take any chances. I'm going with glasses today.
So how is it? Is it pretty close to where you have, what do they call it? The point of, what's the, there's a word for it. It's going to drive me nuts what it is.
The whole track, right? So they have track.
Are you in the path of it?
The path. So it goes from Texas and kind of up through, it's west of here, goes up through like Erie, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Cleveland's going to have a great site. The Cleveland Guardians had to move their start time. They normally start their game times on the home opener at like 4:00. They moved it back an hour because of this. Because I'm in Maryland, south of the Pennsylvania Maryland line. We're going to have a pretty good site to see this event. It was a little overcast, but now the sun is out, and good. So I mean, people are taking time off of work. There's no outdoor activities. Like if you play a sport in Maryland or Pennsylvania, they canceled sports for the afternoon. For this event, I guess mostly because the concern that you would be maybe looking up
know, and then
without protection,
sure.
Maybe I don't know. It's interesting, kind of, you know. And obviously, it's a once in a lifetime or maybe twice in a lifetime type of event.
Yeah, when was the? I'm trying to think. I saw it last time. Now I'm trying to think of how long ago was it? Six years ago, maybe.
Yeah.
And we 18, saw it. 19? We were.
Yeah,
we were there. I was down and saw it. I'm blanking on the stupid word where they call it like the point of like the perfect eclipse. But we were in Madras, Oregon, which is probably, 5 hours south of Seattle. You know who's from Madras, Oregon, by the way? Jacoby Ellsbury.
Oh, nice.
And Madras, Oregon is like in the middle of nowhere in central Oregon. And we saw it and it was freaky. It was so weird. Yeah. And what the weirdest part about it was when it happens, the eclipse happens, the birds freak out because they're like, wait a minute, it's day. Now it's dark. What's going on? And they were like circling and making all these weird noises. I'm like, oh, that's just so creepy. But it was wild. It was like a really, really cool thing. There was this group of people that stayed at a hotel not too far from Madras, Oregon. And they were all staying there because I think in the Chinese culture, it was if you conceive at the point of the eclipse, it's like good luck. So they had rented out this entire hotel. So when the eclipse hits,
oh my God,
they could conceive and try to have a child. I mean, that's how serious the stuff was. It was nuts.
Yeah, it's serious. You know, serious on the, on this coast. I mean, a lot of towns have sold out hotels, and they've got flights that are going, some of the stuff that's going on, it's intense. But I mean, I think the next one won't be the next full eclipse or pretty close to full eclipse won't be for another 20 years. So, hopefully I'm around for that, but I'm not taking any chances.
You're going to be around. You know what? I'm trying to transition from the eclipse to baseball. I'll just say that the Mariners offense is like an eclipse. It's been blacked out. I mean, it's just, the whole offseason, Jim, and again, Jim Duquette is with us, MLB GM with the Mets and the Orioles, of course, MLB Network Radio, Sirius XM. You can follow him on social media, Jim Duquette, GM. It's the whole offseason was meant to improve the offense. They knew where they were going to take a step back defensively. Well, they've taken a step back defensively, but offensively, through 10 games, and we get it, it's early, they have just not delivered so far on the promise, and no one is really doing anything, including the returning players like Julio and JP and all those guys. But it's been a struggle offensively for the group so far.
Yeah, and there's no doubt. I mean, Polanco obviously hit a home run the other day, his first one, so you're hoping that he can build on that. We've talked about Garver before with his early injuries. You know, hopefully he'll start to figure it out. You know, they had five hits in an inning. You felt like it was this unbelievable, rally and streak. You know, they haven't had that happen to him, I think, since last August. So, you start to see little things like that. He scored five runs, I think, in back-to-back games, man. That game that Munoz blew.
Oh,
that's a tough one right there, right? Because Milwaukee, I'll give Milwaukee credit. Milwaukee's playing a lot better right now. Like the timing, sometimes when you play teams, it's really about the timing more than it is. Because I'm not so sure they're going to be that good. But, Mariners playing them at Milwaukee right now. They're playing well. And, if you're not going in there and you're not firing on all cylinders, like you mentioned, the offense, here's the thing about the Mariners that bothers me right now. They've been outscored the second most in the sport. The first most are the White Sox, and the White Sox are pitiful. I mean, it is a really bad team. Now, they are bad offensively and pitching and defense, like the whole thing. So, there's still
I'm not feeling better. I'm not making you feel good
right now. I know. I hear you. But, I mean, that's the reality of how bad the offense has been is they're being outscored. Obviously there's been some issues on the pitching side too, but mostly the story right now with the Mariners is the lack of offense, no doubt.
Well, and it's, you got in the first 10 games of the season, you've got a position player in Josh Rojas pitching for you. Like that's not good.
No. And there's not been a ton of position players that are pitching, at this time of the year. And the fact that he has already, it's definitely not what you want. Now, the concern, the issue on that is you want to make sure you conserve your pitching. If you don't need to throw a guy, an inning, then you do it. But it's never, here's the thing. When I was a GM, I absolutely hated a position. I thought it was an embarrassment. Now we see it's more common for position players to throw, but I would tell the manager, do not throw a position player just for the overall look. I'd rather have a guy pitch and then option him out to the minor leagues and bring up a new guy so we could finish the game with a legitimate major league pitcher.
The being in a major league clubhouse, being a GM, how do you guard against not overreacting to 10 games? Because you've already seen it a little bit with this fan base, and there's other fan bases probably that are overreacting. I bet you the Mets fan base is overreacting and just like wanting to jump off the ship and all that. But, I've already seen a couple instances here with Scott Service where he is bristled at some questions already.
Yeah.
Trying to warn people, don't jump off the bandwagon yet and all that. It kind of seems to me that he's feeling the pressure a little bit, but how, as an organization, do you guard against that to not panic so early in the season?
I think it's hard to do. You really can, and this happens every single year with the teams that start slow. It takes on a life of its own early on. If you're not careful, it can, bleed in, and your team can be affected by it adversely. So you really, as a manager, you try to protect the team from that type of message. But it's really common. It's not just the questions, because sometimes managers will bristle at a question and, it's not the feeling of the fan base. But the feeling of the fan base is real too. And as you're kind of talking about, it's, the expectations are high here. And there's a big changeover and there's some doubts about the way things were kind of turned over. Obviously, there are doubts about how much money was spent. So all of those things, if you got off to a good start, all those questions, they don't even come up. But when you have this type of start, of course you're going to have to answer those. And I think maybe Scott was hoping that it wouldn't get to be this early you'd have to answer them. That's probably why he's bristling. But, it's unfortunately never too early. And you can change these things overnight for sure. And I think they eventually will. I mean, they have a good pitching matchup in Toronto. Toronto's off to a slow start too. So, I think, but it is – that's the biggest fear about starting slow is your players start to feel that added pressure. And it's hard to play the sport when you have that pressure.
And if your fan base gets it, they can feel it, right? It kind of just, it feels like it permeates throughout the entire city. And I think probably people within the organization can kind of get a sense of like, oh my God, here. Because what do? You do the whole, here we go again routine.
That's right. No, it does. It takes on a life of its own. You know, your fans, sometimes in certain cities, you hear the booing or you hear the unrest as a player and you press and you try to do more. And then it's like, oh, geez, we'd rather be on the road than at home early on in the season because you feel that from the fans, you know. And so you don't want that to kind of bleed into your, the start of the season. Everyone's optimistic. You're feeling still really good about the Mariners, as a front office and as a group. But it can go away quickly. And so I think that's the issue where with the Mariners, you have to start to see some results here quickly, sooner rather than later. And I was a little optimistic that they had back-to-back games where they scored 5 runs. I know one of them was a loss, but I think that the offense is starting to show some signs anyway of breaking out of it.
Hopefully. One of the big storylines that came out of it was the Bryce Miller performance over the weekend, who was electric 7 innings, but 78 pitches.
Yeah.
I mean, what's your take on that one? Because I think they came out, did Scott Servais with a long post and a long comment about this is why we did it. The old school people will come out and say, he was at 78 pitches. What are we doing here? Right. Let him get into the eighth. This is an opportunity to even finish the game. Where do you kind of stand on that and how we are treating pitchers in this day and age?
So this is a tough one because, around the league, you've seen some high profile injuries, right? With Tommy John surgery and the injuries and IL placements on pitchers is up dramatically over the last 10 years, 12 years, up over 100%. It's like doubled over. So the injury, it's an epidemic right now. So you're trying to protect the pitchers. The problem is the more you protect them, the more injuries we have. And there's, if the industry had an answer, which they're trying to get, then you would see everyone do the same thing. They have no answers. And so, I think with the Mariners, part of the equation early in the season is how much did you prepare them to go deep into the game? No one really does that. Usually there used to be, you get to 90 pitches your last start in spring training, and then you could get to 100 pitches on opening day. No one trains their starters like that anymore. So they're so protected. You don't leave spring training. Spring training is just stay healthy. And so they're not prepared. Even when he was as dominant as he was, the fatigue is a huge factor in these injuries. And even though it wasn't a ton of pitches, that up and down, they've done enough studies to say, all right, well, if he's been up and down 7 times like he was for over 7 innings, there's enough evidence to suggest that it does impact you there as the later you go. So I understand, that's their biggest asset. You want to be protective. I thought he did a heck of a job for 7. You should be able to win that game with the bullpen. And, thankfully they did.
So what is your theory on all these injuries? I mean, Strider, who's going to be done. You've got Shane Bieber, who's going to be done. You've got Perez is going to be done.
Yeah.
What to make of this? MLBPA comes out and says, hey, this is the pitch clock. The pitch clock is causing this. Now, I don't know where you feel about that. Or are we just in a day and age? Because in the last 10 years, all we have heard is, harder, harder, faster, faster, velocity, velocity, velocity. Is it now just catching up to all these guys in this new way of training to simply max out and throw as hard as you possibly can from the very first pitch?
See, that's the bigger issue is the max effort, the difference in changing the extra effort on throwing breaking balls. The spin rates are at the highest levels they've ever been. And to exert your arm, just the max effort on every pitch. Dr. Keith Meister, who's one of the premier orthopedic surgeons, he's the Texas Rangers head physician. He came out about a month ago and said, he's seeing more and more injuries, and he thinks it's the cause of that sweeping slider, that big breaking slider that breaks like between 17 and 20 inches, like the width of the plate or more, plus the power changeup. I'll throw in that split finger pitch. Those are causing what he said explosive type of tears to the ulnar collateral ligament. And so I think those are the primary reasons at the major league level. There's other studies that I've been a part of when I was in the front office that there's amateur overusage, you know, the chase of velocity, even at the high school level, that is causing, you know, a lot of these, you know, injuries. So it is a, you know, you could talk about training in the off season. There's like, I could come up with a dozen reasons, and I'm not the only one. Like, front offices across the sport, they're throwing up their hands saying, we don't have any answers to this question.
Yeah, right now. And I wonder if it does start at the lower level. I brought this up a couple of times, one to Bill Krueger, and your thoughts on it. And I don't know what's right or wrong, and I'm not trying to point a finger of blame here, but I watched a high school game this past weekend where this kid's a great pitcher. I mean, phenomenal.
Yeah,
he's throwing 92. He's a junior. I mean, and it looks good. Breaking ball looks great.
Yeah.
You know, he's playing in a, I don't want to say non-competitive game, but it's not a league game. It's just like a friendly game. And he's throwing over 100 pitches. I think it's like 105 pitches. Throwing at 92, big curveball and all that. And then he gets pulled from the game, I think after, I want to say five, maybe, I think, innings. And then goes and plays shortstop. And I remember turning to a dad there, and I go, man, like, if you're going to pull him after throwing 105, last thing I'm going to do is put him at shortstop.
Right.
And I don't need him making even more throws, especially across the field like that. When you hear something like that, is that kind of, how does that sit with you?
No, it doesn't sit well at all. In fact, those are the things when we were, you know, scouting, and, you know, that part of my career before was scouting and player development before I was a GM. Those are the things that we wanted to know when guys were, you know, when we were drafting high school pitchers. Like, high school pitchers are the biggest risk in the sport right now. You see, they get drafted lower, even though guys are thrown in the mid to high 90s at that age. And, you know, you draft them and you're like, oh, okay, in 4 years, they'll only be 21, 22 years old. That's a huge thing. Well, they're also the riskiest in terms of injury because of that, because of the fact that, you know, a lot of times in high school, your best athletes are playing shortstop and they're pitching. Mm-hmm. And if you're firing in that many pitches, and 100 pitches, by the way, is a lot at this time of the year. But I've seen guys throwing 120, 130, 140 pitches, and then they're pitching a couple of days later in relief, and they're playing shortstop or they're catching. Like, when they're done pitching, they should be playing first, or they're DHing, or go to the outfield. They shouldn't be doing any type of throwing at all. And that, to me, is a big, big concern as well. And that's why Dr. James Andrews, who's probably done the most Tommy John surgeries, you know, in the history, if we were to keep track, he's the GOAT of Tommy John surgeries. What a moniker.
Yeah, I don't think you want to be the GOAT of that, but
congratulations.
You're going to talk about what he said this weekend, where they're doing more surgeries at the youth level, and it surpassed what they're doing at the major league level. Jim, that's not good. But that's on youth coaches. Yes. I'm a youth coach. I mean, I coach 11-year-olds. Yep. And that's on high school coaches to protect these kids from themselves.
It's mind-blowing that, you know, the college, the high school coaches, the youth coaches are more about winning than protecting, mm-hmm. you know, the young pitchers. And I think that the one thing that I've seen, you know, and I help coach travel ball too, 12U team, and I oversee some other teams, and we have strict pitch counts on kids that we adhere to, and we just, we're not going to try to win every game. We're about player development. That's most important in the program. And if you do that, surprisingly, you'll have your share of wins and, you know, and success. Sure. If you focus on the fundamentals, you focus on player development. So it shouldn't be just about the winning. And I think that's the bit, you know, another concern at, you know, as these kids continue to play, you know, that comes forward or is carried forward, you know, to, you know, they're age 16, 17, 18 years old.
Hey, what are you, you're very sensitive. I mean, you can see my hat. I'm wearing a Seattle Supersonics hat. I'm wearing a Gary Payton and a Sean Kemp t-shirt. I think everybody here in Seattle is very sensitive of this next topic and what has happened to the Oakland Athletics.
Yes.
You know, we watched it with the Sonics being taken out of this town, moved to a different part of the country, and we just know how much, you know, we miss them, and hopefully they come back. What's happening in Oakland right now, in the situation where they're going to leave Oakland, they're going to go up north, play in Sacramento, they're just going to be called the A's and the Athletics, and we don't know for how long. They haven't even begun construction at all on this place in Vegas. They are signed through there through the 27 season, I believe, and they can be there through 28 if it's not ready. What has led to this? I guess I'm disappointed in Major League Baseball, the owners, everyone involved, for allowing this to happen, because it just does not seem like John Fisher and this group is fit to own a team.
Right.
And that, you know, if the difference between staying in Oakland was $35 million, which is essentially a player, and they couldn't afford that or didn't want to do it, that's just a problem. What has led to this? What can we do to fix it, if we can fix anything? It probably can't.
It's a complicated issue, in the sense that, you know, the current ownership tried three or four different places, you know, that didn't pan out. And I would argue, in looking at some of them, they really weren't realistic, right? So there's one that we're going to have around a college campus. They weren't never going to get approval by the locals. And so the fact that they actually pursued it was kind of a joke, in the way I viewed it. It's like, what are we doing? Like, I think they're the primary people to blame. John Fisher in particular, the owner. And just the way he's handled it, he's had a tone-deaf approach to, you know, responses and to the fan base and everything else. I think that's part of it. I think the pressure that Major League Baseball wants to expand, and they need to get the situation in Tampa and Oakland settled quicker. And because of the ineptness of John Fisher, there's been pressure by Major League Baseball to get this thing resolved no matter what. You know, if they just said, listen, stay there in Oakland and work it out, they would have worked out that most recent situation. And, oh, by the way, we're going to give you a deadline. We're not going to let you move. And, you know, right now they have receiving revenue sharing. That was a big part of this too. Like, they were not going to get revenue sharing, I think, after this year. So and that's Major League Baseball, by the way, and the Players Association pushing and pressuring them. So they're to blame too. But I really feel like the majority of this is on John Fisher.
Where do you think baseball would like to expand to? What would make most sense to you?
Well, if this actually goes through and they go to Vegas, I think Oakland will be under consideration for an expansion team there, or Sacramento. Sacramento, you know, could be a fallback if the way the ownership of Oakland is handled things, they may botch this Vegas situation.
Yeah.
There's a good chance of that. Sacramento feels like a fallback option. I could see Portland being. They need something in the West or the Northwest. Right?
I agree. I think Portland would be a great. I mean, I spent time there. I think Portland would be awesome. It's a great. For people who don't know, Portland is just an unbelievable rich history of baseball.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, to me, that's the number one, I think, for me also. So I could see that or Oakland if the A's actually end up in Vegas. And I think the other one on the East Coast would be in Nashville. Nashville, there's a lot of legs already. It's a growing city. They have a couple of people already. Former Dave Dombrowski, who runs the Phillies now, he's part of an ownership group there. Dave Stewart, former A, he's a part of an ownership group that's, you know, really pushing for Nashville to be an expansion team. So I think those are the two front runners. I don't think Montreal. That's just my opinion. As a city, Charlotte always pops up. You know, there's cities like that. Austin's growing. Could be a team there. Mexico City. I don't know. You know, those are the ones that have kind of popped up here more recently. But I wouldn't be surprised if it was Portland or Oakland, if it's open. You know, or Sacramento.
There he is, Jim Duquette, every Monday talking to Major League Baseball with us, MLB Network Radio, Sirius XM. Follow him on social media at Jim Duquette, GM. You're fine, American. Good luck. Have fun with the eclipse today. Put on the glasses one last time for our viewers. There you go.
We'll see you, Jim, next week. I can't see you with these things on, but I will see you next week.
That's right. As always, we'll talk to you tomorrow, and we promise to be better.
Shirt, no shoes, no tie.
Would anybody like to smoke some pot?
Yeah.
I was born to love you. I was born to lick your face. I was born to rub you, but you were born to rub me first.
What do you need my dress for? We like to send out a mailer.
Mother of mercy, I don't speak Japanese!